Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock and Brandon Thurston, and here we are back at our homes after a weekend in Philadelphia for WrestleMania weekend, the biggest WrestleMania of all time, the launch of the Paul Levesque era. How are you, Brandon?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I am doing well. You have survived the eclipse. You made it back to Buffalo. All is well in the world.
Yes, I flew during the eclipse. I saw it. It didn't get completely dark, I think, because I was like still in Pennsylvania, so I was not in like the perfect path of the eclipse. But I saw it from my plane, not my personal plane, from American Airlines. But I did land and then do a podcast.
Well, today's show, we are not going to be joined by a guest. Instead, we have quite a lot to dissect and go through over the weekend. We're going to be heavily focusing on WrestleMania, some of the business notes that have come out since then, and several items as well from the press conference that, Brandon, you were present for. We will be talking about that. The night after WrestleMania edition of Raw, which did a phenomenal number, and that is going to be some of the focus. For those that are tuning in, YouTube is trying to muzzle us, but we are going to battle through. This might not be going out live on YouTube, but it will be up after the fact. So Twitter and Facebook are your friends for live streaming, as they're trying to keep us down, Brandon, but we will persist.
Yes, we'll continue on here.
So let's start with kind of a general thought on this weekend and what you feel this was in terms of WWE utilizing their biggest weekend of the year that, in my opinion, was done to deliver a very strong unified message of this new era, this Paul Levesque era, your era. It's our era. It's no one person's era. But I can't say I was necessarily going into this weekend with the expectation that this would be the massive takeaway, but I think that was impossible to ignore over two nights about that language being used and one key person's name absolutely not being used and seeming to be our complete disassociation from Vince McMahon.
Vince who?
He was, his father was a promoter, and he was kind of just the in-between McMahon, you know.
Okay. This would be the one that came after Vincent J. McMahon, who, you know, the Madison Square Garden guy.
Yeah, yeah. Dabbled in some bodybuilding, I think was a bit of a football fan. You know, a cup of coffee in the pro wrestling industry.
Yeah, but I think it was intentional that that was the night two message. Stephanie came out at the beginning of night two, and there was plenty of talk from Paul Levesque on the press conference about the, you know, it's the new era. It's the Paul Levesque era, and him clarifying that it's not just his era, but it's everyone. And I thought there was some very interesting language, that he used that I've, you know, kind of put together here in terms of, you know, he spoke about, not only Stephanie, but he also said, you know, things like, it's our era. I don't know if you have the clip, interrupt me if you do, but the people that endured, the people that hung in there, the people that trusted, the people that over the last year or whatever it's been, that gave their sweat and tears, to get where we are, because somewhere along the way, they trusted a process that led them to remembering how much fun this is. And we wanted to do it and make a product that they all could enjoy and love again. It sounds like they're overcoming, that's end quote. It sounds like they're overcoming something, or, you know, things weren't being enjoyed and thing you couldn't love it as much anymore, over the last year or so. And it just leaves you to wonder what was going on over the last year or so that he's referring to. Didn't quite spell it out.
I think that was sort of many people's takeaway, was this interesting little, dance that they were doing throughout the weekend was they were never going to bring up the name Vince McMahon or directly allude to it. But in all the indirect ways, how could you not take a statement like Paul Levesque gave and this massive issue that the company has been able to, like this giant roadblock that was named Vince McMahon that was in their way that they have, I mean, basically stating, like, you know, reminding people of the love that they had for this industry. Like they, I would say they went further than I would even anticipate of not just we're moving on, but that the ways of old were extremely, handcuffing, very detrimental to this company, and we are through it. And this was an active force that was impeding our growth that we're now experiencing without the shackles of Vince McMahon by text or any kind of communication to interfere with our growth.
Yeah, and I guess we should discuss a little bit about the press conference. So I was at the press conference. You were not, and there were I don't know how many media credentialed for WrestleMania. It had to be in the hundreds, and there must have been. I mean, that press room was pretty full. I would say maybe over 100 people in there. Certainly more than 50. I know there's a lot of people standing around and whatnot. But I, you know, I understand it wasn't possible to put everybody in the press conference. But I was there. I got one question on night one. If you were there, John, what questions might you have asked? If you could ask a question to maybe in particular Paul Levesque or even Dwayne Johnson.
I would say starting with Paul Levesque, I was most interested in Stephanie McMahon and how her return came about. I think that he gave plenty of openings for, you know, the doubt that was removed from her. What doubt? What were the circumstances that led her to leave this quote unquote home that she is now returning to? And in what capacity is she returning? Was this simply a one night appearance? Is she going to have a loose affiliation with the company? Is she going to have a day to day affiliation with the company? What has been the message to your talent and staff since we last had an opportunity to speak with you in January, which was only 2 days removed from the Janelle Grant lawsuit that you had not had a chance to read at that point? In those 2 months, what has been done that this new era should also be attached to a new culture that many people would be interested to hear about how you are fostering as the public face of the company? Those would be two that come to mind for Paul Levesque. For Dwayne Johnson, I think you could certainly look at the fact of how is this board constituted in a new image, and that you were willing to attach your name and endorsement of this company in the wake of these allegations. What gives you the confidence that this is a new company and one that you are going to not just be a part of, but have equity in?
Right. So I did ask him about Brock Lesnar, and we did get a little bit of information in terms of, sounds like he's still under contract, and sounds like he's in Saskatchewan still, and that there was, in fact, conversations, I believe was the word that Paul Levesque used. There were conversations about him returning at the Royal Rumble. So it seems pretty likely to me that there was a plan for him to return at the Royal Rumble, but they decided not to for whatever reason. I'm not sure. Maybe it has something to do with he who shall not be named. But as we've seen, you know, they've taken Brock Lesnar out of the video game, out of the 2K video game, both the mobile game, and he was really minimized in the console game that just came out. So, you know, no expectation that he's going back anytime soon. He didn't even come back on Monday night. Not that there's a strong expectation that he would. But I think, you know, as we were discussing it at times, you know, I don't know that if Brock Lesnar returned, if the response to him would be that negative, or if it would be that distracting relative to what they intend if they did run an angle. But we have seen, even, you know, something as relatively minor as, you know, what Ronda Rousey said about Drew Gulak in terms of them having this interaction where he, according to her, pulled on the drawstring of her pants, and, he's been, you know, removed, from his presence in NXT and, what's the name of the stable?
The No Quarter Catch Crew.
Yes, he's no longer part of the graphic on NXT.
Yeah, they did a backstage segment with the remaining members of the group. Drew Gulak was noticeably absent. And then when they came out on the like Titantron video, his name was omitted from the group. So that would certainly suggest that they're that Drew Gulak, I think if it had been limited to just the backstage segment where he was not there, I don't know if you would have been reading too much into it, but seeing the graphic with his name removed, I think it certainly put some more substance into the idea that there is at least some fallout in connection to last week. But WWE has not officially addressed that, nor would I expect that they're probably going to speak on his status unless, you know, there was a release or something of that level. Going back to Brock Lesnar, I completely agree with you that I think had Monday's Raw ended with Brock Lesnar, I think there would have been you would have had a subset of fans, more so online, that would have been critical of the decision. But I think the live reaction would have been 85% positive, if not more. And I think we can even look at the litmus test that was conducted on Friday night during Paul Heyman's speech, the reaction when Brock Lesnar's name was brought up by Paul Heyman versus a passing reference to Vince McMahon that you accurately pointed out might not have even been a reference to Vince McMahon Jr. Rather than Vincent James McMahon. And that elicited boos from the audience just in a quick passing way at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah, Rock interrupted the booze he was getting and said, "Senior, I meant senior, okay?" But yeah. And the other thing to add is this, and this was especially on Sunday, right? Like the moment where Cody Rhodes wins and you've got Bruce Pritchard coming out and Paul Levesque himself is called out. And I didn't realize when I called into you guys leaving the stadium that Cody had specifically asked for Bruce Pritchard and Paul Levesque to come out. Figured they just all trailed out and I knew that Triple H had this entrance. But there's that happens. So you get, you know, it's clear that you've got, you know, Triple H is very much in control of this and Stephanie McMahon is saying that this is, you know, the Paul Levesque era and nobody understands this better than Triple H. And then you begin the press conference with Chris LaGentle, who's the head of communications. And you've got Triple H mentioning Lee Fitting, who's basically taken over the role of Kevin Dunn. Of course, who can forget Nick Khan, you know, hugging Cody as he leaves the ring. Not the only Khan in the wrestling business who hugs wrestlers. We can say that now. So you've got all these new leaders who are, these are the new faces of WWE, even though we're in a very indirect way casting Vince aside.
Yeah, I think, like, how much of that was improvised at the end, I think people tend to look at, especially grand WWE celebrations, as probably some level of a calculation attached to it. But regardless of how that closing scene came together, that to me is going to be sort of your snapshot of this quote unquote new era, is not just Cody Rhodes as our flag bearer, but here are all the people behind the company that are leading the company that you had present there in the ring, from Paul Levesque to Nick Khan to Bruce Pritchard to CM Punk that is now back in the company. Like this, when I take a step back and look at this weekend, it is interesting how we saw very select appearances on both nights. I would say the most noteworthy being Stephanie McMahon, but a lot of people that you would associate as quote unquote Vince McMahon guys, from a Bruce Pritchard to an Undertaker to a John Cena, whether or not Steve Austin was contacted to be in that Undertaker role. Here are all people you don't just associate as Vince McMahon's, you know, business projects and people that he promoted, but people that in the wake of those allegations were those that were, I would say, the most, we're going to stand by Vince up until the lawsuit details that had come out. When we saw that those images come out of that dinner party or whatever of who was there, like a Pat McAfee or a Brock Lesnar or an Undertaker,
John Cena, yeah.
And John Cena. And here these people are sort of just by their appearances was sort of an endorsement of the new era. And I think that was a key with Stephanie McMahon of this being like, you know, this is this palace intrigue, like this was her very definitively endorsing this side of things and being attached to this new product and a non Vince McMahon WWE.
And who's left standing by Vince McMahon at this point?
His trainer, who we heard
from. Personal trainer.
Yes. That's yeah, his name is
maybe his spokesman at this point.
Might be, because he put out an Instagram statement about the fact that this was the first WrestleMania that Vince McMahon was not there for, and how I'm paraphrasing, how quickly people forget. I would argue maybe it's because people have a decent memory of what has been very public over these last few months. But this is one of the few individuals outside of Vince McMahon's legal counsel that I would state has had any statements of support for Vince McMahon. Here's the statement. Vince McMahon was unable to attend his first WrestleMania. How quickly people forget that without his vision, there would be no wrestling or WrestleMania. Take that, Sam Mushnick. Sadly, when a person is down, the people who say they love you turn their backs on you. I mean, certainly you can read into that however you want. And lost on that statement was his musical choice. Clearly a Vince edict there with
AC/DC. It was an AC/DC song. Yes, it's like Back in Black or something, which is that if that doesn't guarantee the authenticity that this is really Vince McMahon's trainer, although I do think this looks like the guy who's also in Muscle and Fitness with him, like when he's on like the leg extension machine, he's in the background. So it looks like him. But yes. It's absolutely. I'm sure that's a song that Vince listens to while he's in the gym.
Yeah,
not on the phone though. He does not speak on the phone.
What do you think is Vince McMahon's next public? Do you expect anything like statement wise, any kind of PR for Vince McMahon, or do you feel that he still stays quiet in the lead up to this case and just remains with this private profile that he has assumed since resigning as the chairman?
Well, I mean, if you take the his lawyer, Jessica T. Rosenberg, at her word, there's going to be more that will emerge along the lines, it would seem, of the New York Post article, which published a love letter from Janelle Grant to Vince McMahon. I imagine there might be more things like that come out in media. And certainly he's going to defend himself in this lawsuit, which it's probably about a month away from when we have an answer from WWE, John Laurinaitis, and Vince, their response to the complaint. But as far as like, can you imagine him doing anything in business at this point? The XFL doesn't belong to him. That IP is not even being used right with the UFL. Who would do business with him? I imagine it'd be pretty hard for him to find business partners at this point, considering Jim definitely put the thumbs down on him. So I don't know what's left for him to do, but he has liquidated a ton of stock, and we know that. I've got a slide for this here. He sold more stock, in fact, recently, just the other day, to TKO and to Endeavor, and we now know that, I mean, here it is. He's liquidated $1.46 billion in TKO stock. That doesn't even count that in September he got a special dividend of $111 million. So he's basically, since September, since the TKO merger closed, he's liquidated and received about $1.5 billion in cash. Who knows what he's done with it? He may have already put it into other assets. But that's an enormous amount of money. And I know Vince has got some legal troubles facing him, and he probably has to and has hired some attorneys. But even if you get the best attorneys in the world, you're still going to have a lot of money left over from $1.5 billion. So
how many, I think you could buy around like 750 WCWs with this amount, some sort of whatever the final cost was, even including all the advertising that they committed to.
Yes.
I mean, it's an astounding figure that this man has liquidated in a few short months. This one being interesting just in the sense that, as Brandon said, these were two separate sales that were disclosed on Monday to Endeavor as well as TKO. So this was not a case of Vince just selling these in the open market, but rather obviously a business deal with these two entities and buying back his stock, which now takes us what is now the updated percentage of stock that Vince owns, and what's the significance of the threshold he's now under, it's, as you understand it, because it's a little beyond my understanding.
So this is where things get really exciting on this program.
Okay, sit back.
So Vince now has about 8 million shares left of TKO stock, which sounds like a lot. But if you look at the annual report, you get the number of shares that there are in TKO, which is about 172 million shares. So 8 million divided by 172 million is about 4.67%. So he's under 5% now, which you know what that means. When you're under 5% of a publicly traded company, that means you no longer have to file a Form 13D, which means every quarter, anybody who owns at least 5% of this stock has to file what's called a 13D, where you say, this is how much stock I have at this time. If you have 10% or more, or if you're an executive, you have to file a Form 4, which is what we saw for Dwayne Johnson recently when he got his 90 some odd thousand shares, apparently, for WrestleMania.
The new WrestleMania payoff, by the way.
That's right. So everybody ask for that from now on. You want 90,000 TKO shares. This may be it. This may be it for us in Vince McMahon ownership filings. We may never see another one. They did file an 8K for this. So, I mean, I don't know what the legalities are around this, right? Like, we didn't get a Form 4 showing that he had disposed of this many shares to TKO and this many shares to Endeavor. What we got instead was an 8K. An 8K can be filed for all sorts of reasons. It's just called a current report. Anything that's material that we feel that we need to update investors about, we file an 8K. So that's what they did in this case. There was no Form 4 related to this. So apparently they didn't even have to do it for this transaction because he became under 5%. Oh, actually, Form 4 is only 10%. So, of course, they didn't have to file because he was already at about 8% at that time. So there, I just explained it to myself.
Do you have any understanding if Vince McMahon was to completely divest himself, could that just happen quietly and it would be up to TKO to disclose such a fact?
I think so. Maybe there's an argument that it's material to if he were to, let's say, all at once sell all 8 million of these shares, maybe it would be a good thing to disclose that to investors. And maybe if not that, maybe you just want to put that out in the media somewhere.
I think they would want to publicize that fact if such a thing happens. But just remarkable would you could think that, like, Vince McMahon's complete divesting of his connections to WWE/TKO could just be, could happen and people would not even know about it.
I think that's possible. Yes. So like, for all intents and purposes, like this is the last SEC required, transaction that he's made, unless he, you know, goes back above 5%, which seems quite unlikely at this point.
I think we are live now on YouTube. So regardless, the whole thing will be up after the fact. Since we are having trouble with YouTube today, I'm not going to be so picky on super chats versus questions that do pop up. And maybe we can look at this one about Vince McMahon. Let's just get to the meat of this question. Could Vince McMahon show up in AEW? What's his no-compete situation like? What would be restricting Vince McMahon if he wanted to start up another company?
I would have to look at it. I do remember coming across some no compete clauses in his agreement with TKO. If he wanted to jump ship and become all elite, I think he would have a waiting period of a certain amount of time, probably something like a year or 6 months or something like that before he could make his debut on TBS for AEW Dynamite.
Shows up in the devil mask and the higher power is Vince McMahon. Yes, I'm sure that would just be a wonderful moment that the AEW audience would readily accept. Thank you, Andrew, for the question. We'll be monitoring these throughout. Yeah, I find that it was just such an interesting, I keep using the term PR exercise. That's what I saw on both nights. Like, this was such a coordinated series of messages to the greater public when there was going to be so much attention on these two nights of WrestleMania, that this was our strong cutting of any ties to Vince McMahon. And that, to me, was the overall message of both nights of WrestleMania. And I think that's what everybody took from this. I think at this point, we will also just hear a quick clip. And this was Paul Levesque at the press conference speaking about two other people who can claim ownership of this era, beginning with his thoughts on Lee Fitting.
But when I tell you Lee Fitting, man, I love working with him. He has a passion for this just like we do. Might be new here, but man, he's all in. And for me, he's the kind of guy that I want to go to work for. I want to do stuff to make his job easier, and I want to collaborate with him, and I want to make things better with him. So I can't say enough good stuff about him. A lot of the change that you see and a lot of the success that you're seeing comes from Lee Fitting. And then Nick Khan, I can't even begin to describe the change that he's made here. And as if you wanted to boil it all down to a spear tip, it should be he should be mentioned in the top of that. It's his era too, because there's nobody right now. I don't even know how to say it. It's such an amazing partnership with a guy that I have so much respect for that, man, it just clicks. And he's the biggest difference maker I've ever seen.
So Lee Fitting is all in, and Nick Khan, the biggest difference maker. Two takeaways that we had at the press conference. Lee Fitting, some people might not be familiar with Lee Fitting, but I think they would be familiar with some of the changes that you are seeing on screen, and Lee Fitting being the key person whose direction we are seeing the production change through the eyes of. And I mean, it has been interesting to see that as well of this Paul Levesque stamp is dispersing credit among others. This is no longer just the one singular individual that is like, that is this person's product. It is like, we often did not get a whole lot of name drops of who all these different people are, unless it was very special circumstances. And that was another aspect to this past weekend. And of course, the closing shot there where we saw several of these executives right there in the ring.
Right. And Lee Fitting was formerly the director, or at least the head of production, essentially that role for College Game Day, and left ESPN. So and I believe he's part of the Emmys, like the fake Emmys scandal or something. Yes. Like that. So we're not sure what the whole story is about why he left College Game Day and all that, but he did come to WWE only in January, and Paul Levesque said that there's much, much more in terms of production changes to come. As people are loving the Kevin Dunn free days of WWE television.
Before we move on to some of the press release that WWE put out, we'll kind of parse through some of the numbers. Any other thoughts you had just on the two-night press conference, your involvement there, and just what your takeaways were from this press conference or press conferences?
What do you think of the questions? Were questions asked to Paul Levesque or even to The Rock?
No. I would say this was, as much as I think a lot of people gave credit for the questions asked at the Royal Rumble press conference, I thought this was a much more of a step back in that sense, present company excluded. I'm always glad that people such as yourself, John Elba, others are present in these press conferences. I think it's very important, but I'd be lying if I was not sitting with you in our media box and looking around, and instead of asking so much why certain people are here, there is part of me at some of these events, Brandon, where I'm asking, am I supposed to be here? And I say that honestly, and I understand people are going to say, no, it's important that you guys be at these things. These are not for us. These are not here for you and I. I think we should be, I think we should like kind of be there for these things, but I don't think these things are being designed for the type of work that we and others in wrestling media are doing versus others where, I mean, this is 60 minutes of content that has a sponsorship attached to it. That is WWE content for its YouTube channel. And that's what this is designed to be, an extension of WrestleMania that hopefully one, maybe two real questions get slipped in there.
Yeah. I mean, I should say we were in the press box for both nights. Ton of people up there. It was very comfortable. We were able to get our laptops up and do work there. Lots of food. I do have to disclose, I did eat a few WWE provided chocolate chip cookies, coffee, and there's like, they had like full meals out there for everybody. But yeah, lots of cheering in the press box. I believe there's people who don't know this, right? That there's like in some press boxes, there are signs, you know, for sporting events where it says no cheering allowed in the press box. There were, you told me, I think I was out of the room at the moment, but there were Jey Uso hand gestures happening.
Jey Uso was very popular. Yes. the cameos at the end of night two, those were very popular as well. Listen, I don't like to be the curmudgeon or the media police. Like, it's fine. I think that my hope would be at least let there be a balance. I think if you are there, like, not everyone has to be there doing hard news. It is like everyone has different outlets, different audiences, different objectives of what they're getting out of these. Ours is a different lane, I would suggest. I don't want it to be so one side and not the other as well. So that's why I'm always happy that at the very least, you get into these press conferences for instance, and generally you get a chance to get a question in. And I think that's really important.
Right. As I said before, I mean, to W's credit, they've always let me in. Every time I've tried to go to a press conference, they've always let me ask one question. But I think, you know, it feels like the reason why there aren't that many questions, I think the media who we have there are sort of a congress of wrestling fans, in terms of, it does feel like it's, well, maybe it's just representative of the fan base and what they actually are thinking about. I guess I think that, you know, more serious questions about executive leadership, about the lawsuit that's still ongoing, about whether Polovec had any knowledge of any of this, of any inappropriate relationships or any sexual misconduct, at any time before the public of the board knew. I think those are questions that are important to ask. And that talent and staff, and ultimately the company, maybe not the short-term fortunes of certain executives, but the company would be benefited, to have those questions asked, at least, if not answered. But there's, you know, I think there's maybe like 6 to 10 people in the world who are going to ask those questions at this point, and oftentimes only one or two or none of them are there to ask those questions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the rousing success that WrestleMania 40 was. We got the WrestleMania press release. I can't remember if it used to usually be either, I would be covering WrestleManias where they would literally go around and give you like a printed out hard copy of the press release, and you would discount the attendance number, but the gate was usually always the legit gate figure that they would announce. This time we got one, it was Monday morning, I think they issued it. And
Tuesday, in fact. Tuesday. Well, no.
My days what are.
It was Tuesday. It was yesterday. It was yesterday. Yes, Tuesday.
So rather than hard numbers outside of the attendance, it's percentages. I wish they had just given us percentages for everything. Like the attendance.
I've been working with a lot of percentages these last couple of days.
Your breakdown is key. Like this is literally an ongoing algorithm that you need to be updating to try and find one source number and then do the math with regards to percentages. But the gate. Up 78% over last year. So this would be the gate of both nights versus both nights of last year. The all-time single night gate, as we had talked about, was 17.3 million set at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, 2016. Our understanding is they topped that number on both nights this year at Lincoln Financial Field. And these are the updated figures that Brandon has been able to take and give us some data regarding what does 78% year over year mean.
So everybody get their calculators out. If I'm not wrong here, 21.6 times 1.78 is 38.5 million. So across two nights, we're talking $38.5 million. If you cut that in half, that's something over $19 million, right? So that's more than 17.3, which is the all-time real-time currency record for a single professional wrestling event ever. I doubt that night one and night two are exactly equal. I expect that if we find out through the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission or through Pollstar or something someday, what the gates of these separate nights are, that night two is going to be a bigger gate because of probably higher ticket demand, and there's dynamic pricing on Ticketmaster that changes the ticket prices a little bit. So this is a little short of the adjusted for inflation record of, if you take $17.3 million back in 2016 and apply all the inflation that we've experienced since then, you're at about $22.4 million, which is more than $19.8 million. So it stands, if you adjust for inflation, it stands behind, these two nights each stand behind WrestleMania 32 and the the most recent New York, New Jersey MetLife Stadium WrestleMania. But these would be, even adjusting for inflation, the number three and number four all-time pro wrestling gates of all-time pro wrestling gates. But in real-time dollars, this is number one and number two.
Yeah, and this we don't have a location yet for next year's WrestleMania. It was an announcement I thought they would save for the Sunday night, but as of now, we do not have a location. Minneapolis, heavily rumored, but not confirmed yet. But next year, you will also have SmackDown on the USA Network, meaning that you have the potential of Friday night opening up if you're not keeping SmackDown on Friday nights. And how they
three-night WrestleMania.
Well, I mean, why stop? I would think at the very least it would give you that opening for NXT to go to the Friday night instead of Saturday afternoon. How the Hall of Fame fits in there. I mean, you could piggyback it off of NXT if you wanted to. Or you could go to three nights of WrestleMania, always an option. My question for you though is, in 2 years' time, could you see WrestleMania being a pay-per-view?
Because by then, this Peacock deal that they're under currently is going to expire March 2026.
Which we really love that timing, said Nick Khan, which is weeks before WrestleMania 2026.
I guess I would expect it. I would bet, though, that they're not going to try to put the genie back in the bottle. But if somebody gives them the right deal where that makes sense, I'd have to give it some thought. Maybe then, sure. And that being said, even if that does happen, I think that they'll sell a good million buys at $60 or whatever.
Can you imagine like the buys they would have done, especially for night two? Or if you were doing like a package deal, like I think this would have, and maybe this is the only event of the year you do on pay-per-view for WWE. Mm-hmm. But I think like when the product is hot, which it is, I think this year's WrestleMania, that would have been significant additional revenue on top of everything else that they drew this past weekend. But the other side of the coin that you have always brought up is like kind of the accessibility factor of these biggest shows, and never has the barrier for entry to watch WrestleMania, the biggest shows of the year, been this low. And the amount of people that saw this WrestleMania, the two of them, I would easily be, as we have this stat here, viewership up 41% from last week. So these would be the most watched WrestleManias in history by a significant margin.
Yeah. And just real quick on the pay-per-view, I guess if they stay with Peacock, I would think the likelihood of pay-per-view is lower. If they go to Netflix, the likelihood of pay-per-view is still pretty low because we don't have upcharge set up, at least at this time. Not that they couldn't.
ESPN would to me be the highest probability of that, because I think they would see this as just a package deal with UFC that they would be able to just mix together the two, which on a separate note, I was interested to see how much cross promotion there would have been between UFC 300 that's coming up this weekend, being the UFC's biggest card of the year, and WrestleMania. And there was nothing in terms of utilizing this show to promote UFC 300 in any way, or vice versa, UFC on its side promoting WrestleMania, which this was sort of the back-to-back weekends. I was curious to see if they would explore any of that.
Right. So, yeah, that's interesting that didn't happen at all. There's no UFC fighters. There's no what's-his-name cutting a promo on Conor McGregor.
They got their fill of Michael Chandler and a live mic. That's enough.
He's still going after they're throwing to commentary. But anyway, so there's the 41% viewership increase that WWE put out. And then Peacock, or at least, you know, through Variety and other outlets, have reported that the increase in viewership using some other method of calculation is 26% for night one and up 30% for night two. So make of that what you will. But we also know through I've been calling it a Peacock press release, but it's certainly out there through Variety and other places. 1.3 billion minutes watched across two nights. That's a lot of minutes. I've been doing some math.
That's how many minutes I felt WrestleMania 35 was that year I went at MetLife Stadium. It felt like I watched it for 1.3 billion minutes.
The final one night WrestleMania. So I've been doing some math. We're not ready to talk about what I think the viewership might have been. But it is worth noting too, as you mentioned, with the availability of this WrestleMania, it's more than ever, right? It's not a $60 paywall like it was back in the pay-per-view era. The W Network domestically topped out just over 1 million subscribers. So you had over 1 million people who had access to it. But then once you made the jump to Peacock, now you're talking about many millions of people have the ability to just flip it on their TV. And as of the last counts, Peacock is now in 31 million U.S. homes. So, and it has crossed paths. It's overcome ESPN Plus. So it helps, right? It helps with Peacock continuing to grow still in subscribers. Naturally, you're going to have increased viewership. Now, WWE's fan interest has definitely increased over the last year and last couple of years. So that's helping push that forward too. But you are, you've got the opposite problem of as people watching the video can see here in this sort of light green line, which is representing traditional cable homes. As that goes down, as that's everybody's excuse for why television viewership is down, you've got the opposite, not problem, but benefit when it comes to something like Peacock or streaming viewership. It's naturally going to be increased as time goes on.
And rounding that out, just some of the other things they threw in there, largest gate in the history of SmackDown and Raw. Now, last week, they stated that it was the largest domestic gate in Raw's history, yes. At least in the press release for this past Monday's Raw in Philadelphia. They just stated outright largest gate in Raw history. So that would mean ahead of any of the Raws in London, in England.
Right. And we know that the SmackDown record was broken when they went to London most recently, adjoining with Money in the Bank. And I'm looking at our Pollstar spreadsheet to see if I can quickly find that. But that's why they had to have that caveat of domestic. $1.845 million was the London SmackDown gate. So I don't know if that's just an oversight that they didn't say domestic on that occasion, or if it really was more than what Pollstar says is $1.845 million, which probably doesn't include fees.
And we're going to be getting a bunch of international SmackDowns that are piggybacking off the premium live events that are going to be happening over the next number of months, including for the first time, they're going to do SmackDown in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia on May 24th. Usually the MO has been to tape SmackDown a week out and just run that on the Friday. But this time they will be doing SmackDown on a several hour tape delay from Saudi Arabia. So doing two shows there, May 24th and 25th, with the King and Queen of the Ring leading into Double or Nothing on a very busy weekend.
I think it's worth thinking about whether that changes the site fee at all. As we know, we've got this 10-year deal that started in 2018 with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, $50 million every time you go there twice a year. That's $100 million every year. And I don't think this counts as the two events for the year, right? They're still going to go there, I imagine, in the fall, as they do each year, spring and fall, as they go. Is there more money because you're doing two events here? I can't imagine they're just giving it to them for free. This is not as big, right? But it's just an extra event. It's a little icing on the cake, but maybe there's something extra that comes with that for WWE in exchange.
I would think it's a great question. Didn't come up on the weekend, but it's a great question. And one I was discussing with another reporter is in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe even shorter than that, like what would a WrestleMania mean in Saudi Arabia from the standpoint of, like, when you look at all these big events that they are hosting, from boxing, now they're working with the UFC, they have the existing deal with WWE. They have the commitment to bring all of these big events here. I think the next step in all of this is to make Saudi Arabia a tourist destination spot where Americans are comfortable coming over to Saudi Arabia for these big shows in large volume. And a WrestleMania is a proven event that people will travel for, and is like, what investment that would be worthwhile for the government of Saudi Arabia to, instead of just a pay-per-view, to bring what is going to be the tourism event in a WrestleMania. And I could very well see a WrestleMania in Saudi Arabia at some point.
I'm sure they would love it in Riyadh. I think that would be different, wouldn't it, than what are the major events that have – major sports events that have happened in Saudi Arabia? They are bringing the World Cup, right? That's all but guaranteed at this point in the future.
F1, obviously, is on their calendar.
Have they taken an event that is traditionally in the United States, let's say, and basically transplanting it into Saudi Arabia? My thought is that they would be inviting extra media criticism because of that, I think, in terms of, like, I mean, for one thing, is everybody going to travel like they did to Philadelphia? I know it's a further trip, but I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about are you I'm probably not going to Riyadh. I don't know about you. Considering, you know, some of the things I've written about WWE's relationship with the kingdom. So I think that would invite, there'd be a cost to WWE, that comes with whatever they get paid, which I'm sure would be enormous if they, made a deal to bring, WrestleMania to Saudi Arabia.
I think they would be, I think that would be WWE being heavily incentivized to almost create a travel package that is designed for its fans. Like that would be the purpose of what they are paying for, is people going over to Saudi Arabia, raving about their time there and making this. I mean, I just look at where the, like, just following through, like, the boxing and now MMA and in professional wrestling, it's just like at this point, like this initiative, like, it has worked. It has worked. I think that there are very few that are still talking about a lot of these larger issues. And I just feel that it just feels as though this is ultimately this amount of revenue that is there to be made for combat sports is this bottomless pit of revenue that has superseded any kind of larger ethical questions attached to it. And I think fans as a whole are somewhat indifferent to it now.
Yeah. And on one hand, on the positive side, in terms of the government's goals, is that you would get a lot of people traveling in, and then probably disproportionately European fans and things like that, for whom it is a shorter trip, and would have these experiences of, you know, enjoying their time there. And it's, I'm sure it's a wonderful city. But it would invite, I think, some criticism. We have an update on the World Cup.
Yes. Eric, writing in that Saudi Arabia was the only confirmed bidder to host the 2034 World Cup. So there you have that. Let's talk about Raw from Monday. This was the 3-hour edition of the show from Philadelphia, and featured a first hour commercial free hour starring Cody Rhodes, Dwayne Johnson, and to a lesser extent, Paul Levesque, that ate up 45 minutes of the opening show. And when I pulled up Brandon Thurston's quarter hours available at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, I did a double take. I thought maybe you had just, like, leaned onto the wrong key or something. And this graph, I mean, Cody might just have this framed or sold as a t-shirt, because this was an unmitigated success for the first 45 minutes of this show, where the audience, I mean, just what it started at. They started at 2.7 million viewers, and it only grew.
I think you remember you, John, saying they'll probably get to 2 million for this segment because it was, you know, it will draw that well. I think that's what you said on Monday or Tuesday afternoon.
I greatly underestimated. I am only curious if they had just gone even longer. I mean, it's
just
it's
go such all a, 3 hours.
It's such a dramatic, like, drop. And even the you look at this and be like, oh, wow, they fell to 1.8 million. Dude, 1.8 million in the third hour is a gigantic number for third hour, for any hour of the show, much less the third. And this was going against the NCAA, the men's basketball final with Purdue and UConn, that did, what, 14 million viewers? On top of it, this is one of the most successful Raw numbers in years.
Now, those first three quarters are commercial free. So this is doing, I don't know, 10 to 15, maybe 20% lower with ads in it. But nonetheless, I mean, that's not to minimize what a big, big peak this is. I don't think I've got a quarter hour since I've been covering this since early 2022 that is in the 3 millions. And to look at what this entire show did, again, it's benefited by the fact that it was that the first 45 minutes of the show had no ad breaks in it. But if you look at the P18 of 49 over here, what happens if we, you know, okay. But the red dot that indicates, this did a 0.83 PA-1049 rating. That's bigger than anything that SmackDown has done in the last 2 years. This was, by the way, the highest demo for Raw since September 2019, if memory serves me correctly, and the highest total viewership since just before the pandemic, February 2020. Just an enormous number. And I mean, remarkable that it blows away whatever SmackDown is on, which itself on Friday did a very, very good number, much higher than I would have expected. I think they did 2.6 million viewers for SmackDown. So bigger in total viewership than this, but by like 300,000 viewers, but not bigger in the demo. The demo really turned out and showed up for this post-Mania Raw.
Yeah, and the SmackDown the SmackDown show was also going against that big Iowa, what was it, Iowa UConn?
Yes, and it was going against it was Iowa and was it UConn? No, it was the final. It's the final on Friday.
No, this was the final four. Was Friday.
It was UConn. It was UConn, I think. Yes. Anyway, I was watching it on my phone while in attendance between my spreadsheet work that I was doing in the seats at SuperCard of Honor. And that did an enormous audience as well. I think it did like 14 million. I'd have to look, maybe 18 million. Anyway, it had strong competition going against it. So, and both in the case of SmackDown and Raw. So really strong TV ratings numbers as well.
Yes. So just looking at Raw, like they were up 32% from last week in viewership, up 40% in the demo from last week. And while, I mean, this is not going to be a level that in any way is sustainable, I think they're going to be riding quite the wave coming out of WrestleMania, because I would argue that the most valuable person from a television viewership perspective has been number one, Cody Rhodes, in the whole lead up to this. And yes, you won't have Dwayne Johnson for the foreseeable future, but they did quite a lot in these 3 months leading up to WrestleMania that they have got a great like cast of characters built around Cody Rhodes. And I mean, again, it's like the mission statement of the company right now is we are on fire. Look at all the TV sellouts we're doing. Look at all this business we're doing. Hunter's there in the middle of the ring bragging about the gate that they've just drawn. It was like we're on fire and we are going to be it's almost like telling the audience, support us by keeping this consecutive TV sellout streak going. I mean, it's you know, they are utilizing this for all it is worth to rebrand the company and hoping that this success breeds future success.
And now the WrestleNomics game will really begin, right? Because Rock is apparently going away. That's certainly what it sounded like in that promo, right? Roman Reigns maybe taking a sabbatical. I don't know if they're going to go, I don't know what you think, but I don't know if they're going to go to a rematch here or just going to not do that. So who knows if he'll be around. And we'll see if Cody, along with everybody else who's still there, can really carry this to keep the business as strong as it's been over the last couple months. Q1 is always, you know, this elevated quarter for WWE in terms of attendance, at least, and maybe even TV ratings as well. But if we look at what this did as far as a jump from what recent weeks have been doing, I mean, this is the strongest, you know, jump compared to the last 4 weeks in a TV rating for Raw since the 2015 post-WrestleMania episode. And there's no other post pay-per-view bump, you know, really comes that close to it. But if you want to be negative for a second, I did look back and say, what was the rating for like every post main Raw going back several years? And I was kind of surprised by the results in terms of, I mean, I figured that the viewership years ago is going to be way bigger, cord cutting and all that. But if you look at this Monday episode did it, you know, 2.36 million viewers, which is the highest since 2019, right? But the 2019 one was 2.92 million viewers. You look back to this 2015 post-Mania Raw.
Giant.
5.4 million viewers. And there's this really strong drop-off the following year. I can understand what this 2019 to 2020 drop-off is about. It's about the pandemic. But this, you know, this audience that grew from 13, 14, 15 for this post-Mania Raw, and maybe post-Mania Raw is becoming more of a phenomenon at this time in terms of the crowd and Bizarro World and all that. But this really strong drop-off from 15 to 16 is conspicuous to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it was a ho-hum WrestleMania. Like, that was the AT&T Stadium show, but it was, you know, the 2015, that was coming off the big Seth Rollins cash-in. Rock and Ronda Rousey did their cameo on that show. But yeah, just like seeing it here. And these are all, this is all of the 3 hour era of Raw. Yes, we have had 3 hour Raws in this entirety that you have been watching. So, yeah, at this point it is, yeah, it was,
I guess, just to add, I think it's worth noting that, and I would like to, I don't have this prepared, but what I would like to do maybe later is look at, you know, we're hearing about all these records that are being broken by college basketball and whatever, you know, and they're doing that in this cord cutting environment. As great as WWE's business is, they're still doing, you know, a fraction, maybe half of the viewership they were doing, say, 10 years ago. As live sports have continued to, you know, a lot of live sports have had increases and set records recently. There's still, you know, I mean, looking at this one slice of data here, they're doing still about half the audience that they were doing in 2015. So, I mean, that's not to diminish the really strong increases that have happened year over year for a couple of years now. But it's not at the level that it once was. In an environment where we are seeing live sports break their own records from similar time periods. So that's a cause for further research.
You know what I find amazing as well, Brandon, is that when numbers were not reflecting such a healthy on-screen product, man, were there people at the front of the line just screaming, Nielsen's outdated. How can you even rely on this anymore? None of that when numbers are great, when it's this giant success. We are not debating the legitimacy of Nielsen or any of these other metrics. Television is no longer dying. It's look at when there's something big, a lot of people. And I think the phenomenon of the women's NCAA tournament, I mean, it does show you that when something connects, it is television is still the preferred viewing medium for people as a whole.
Right. Well, what I always say is that when there are improvements over time in business metrics, that's because of what you're doing internally. When there are declines in business metrics, that's always because of external factors that are beyond your control, and that you need to not take that seriously.
Last topic we will discuss, and we've saved it for the end. Tonight on AEW Dynamite, security footage is going to be released, Brandon, from backstage at Wembley Stadium at All In, involving CM Punk and Jack Perry. Do you feel that this has garnered enough buzz that you expect there to be a lot of interest for whatever quarter that this airs?
This will pop a quarter hour. Sure.
It will pop a quarter hour. Yeah. And I guess the next question is, what comes out of this? Because like, I have seen some extreme thoughts on like this could be AEW's finger poke of doom moment for the company. I'm not going to go that far. But I think everyone is curious just to see how this is handled and if there is a tangible way to transfer this into their own business versus this just being a clapback at CM Punk and to make him look foolish in all of this. But this is one of the more bizarre promotional tactics that we have seen. And I guess it remains to be seen how this is presented tonight. And there are going to be many, many takes on Wednesday night / Thursday morning, I'm sure.
I'm looking forward to talking about CM Punk and the controversy surrounding him in AEW for another week, at least. I guess the expectations this is going to lead to something involving FTR, because FTR and the Young Bucks are facing each other in this tag team tournament, correct? So, I don't know. But I think it points to, you know, some problems in leadership in that you're willing to do this on television, but you can't give us one comment and explain your side of the story, Tony Khan, about what happened or what, you know, what your feelings are on the situation, or, you know, what leadership could have done better in this situation. But this sort of passive aggressive thing, we'll do this for ratings.
I would think that the best case scenario is that it is footage that is beneficial to Jack Perry's side of things, and that you have to weave this balance of not so much like not sort of like healing the company here, in that Tony Khan is like, if this is beneficial to Jack Perry, it's almost like, well, why was this man like banished from this company, and almost transferring that to the Young Bucks as your authority figures. And we're getting into this I don't know. It's to me a very tough needle to thread, and one that there's certain stories in pro wrestling where my default is doesn't have to be this complicated. And that's what this one falls into for me, but you're right. There's going to be interest to see this footage. And I agree with you. I think that there are times when even if you want to respect Tony Khan's admitted extreme privacy when it comes to these stories, that kind of falls apart when there is a business opportunity to exploit those, and then suddenly it's fair game to utilize this. I think you have to meet people in the middle and show a bit more transparency if this is in your back pocket. And we clearly know there was no legal reason preventing you from discussing this Jack Perry incident. There was no NDA involved. You could have disclosed more. And I think that goes to the trust that your audience has in you. If like, hey, I'm going to meet you halfway and give you our perspective on things, and we're going to at least approach things in a semi-transparent fashion, even if not disclosing everything. Here, like, he's playing the footage. I mean, it doesn't get much more open than that.
And I think one of the big takeaways from Punk's interview with Ariel is not necessarily what he said, but that he said quite a bit. And it sort of shows you that, you know, assuming that whatever NDAs they have are mutual in terms of both agreeing to the same thing and not disclosing information about the same events, that he was willing to say quite a bit about his experience involving AEW, and he was willing to say quite a bit about Tony Khan. And we've gotten really a limited comments. Now, in fairness, that Tony did go out on that Collision, and he went on TV and you know, announced that he was fired, and then he went before the crowd in Chicago and talked to those fans who were very upset. But in terms of, you know, presenting his side of the story or answering any questions at press conferences, he's, you know, shut them all down.
Well, that will be coming up on tap tonight on Dynamite, and Wei Ting and I will be live moments after and dissecting
security footage.
What has my career come to, Brandon? I'm just I'm questioning all of these things at this point. But Brandon, we'll be back on Sunday, regular time, Sunday morning, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. He will not be in an airport hangar. He will be presumably in his home, away from any eclipse, and chatting about whatever is going on business-wise in the world of professional wrestling. And do go on over, check out the Patreon, get Brandon to every press conference that he can, with the exception of maybe Jeddah. Might not be making that trip, but
might not make that trip. Yeah, but who knows? If there's enough subscribers and they all, well, I don't know. I'd have to do some research and maybe go to humanrightswatch.com or something.
Well, there you go. That's going to wrap things up. We are back every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And thank you, as always, for tuning in, navigating any streaming issues. The whole show should be up in its entirety on both the WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling YouTube feeds. And that will conclude another edition of Pollock and Thurston. Goodbye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.